The man identified himself and he said he'd like to follow a Lutheran World Relief quilt to its destination. And I said, well, you have to go to Angola then, because I knew that Angola had been the recipient of more aid from Lutheran World Relief than any other country. And that we had sent 67,000 quilts to Angola in the previous year. And almost that many again in 96, it turns out, and now in 97, we're still shipping things there. Quilts, school kits, health kits, clothing, and material like that. A country like Angola needs that much help, you might say, because of the condition they're in. And I thought right away in answering him that that would be important to show this aid going someplace where it was really needed. And so we worked on it. I went to Angola myself to try to find the story that would be worth filming and spending the money on. The other day there was a man here with an Aid Association for Lutherans t-shirt on, or a hat on. They helped us make this and are helping make it available to parishes. And so it's possible. The station provided the crew and the camera. Two people, one of whom had never been out of America before, the other one, the reporter Kevin, whom you'll see here, had been to Peru once. And so Kevin and Chad from Fargo, North Dakota, find themselves in Luanda, Angola, and then we chartered a plane in order to get to Luena, the town that I was talking about last night in the Vespers meditation, Luena, Angola, on the extreme eastern part of the country, in a province that has been cut off for a long time by the Civil War. So what I'll do is roll the tape, and it, as you may understand, it opens up the issue of landmines in one place. And I'd be happy to talk more about landmines in Angola and other places after you've seen the film, because it's a story of a quilt, but it opens up this international and universal problem through the eyes of this peculiar Lutheran habit of making quilts and sending them overseas around the world to places in need. And I think we've got some quilters in this group. Gertrude, are you? No. Yeah, okay, we have a quilter. From where do you make these?
Astoria, Oregon.
Astoria, okay.
We meet twice a month.
Twice a month. Well, you'll see some of your buddies from Cragness, Minnesota here. You'll also see my boss in the show trying to explain a little bit the connection of getting the quilts out there. Let's hope this works. It wasn't working earlier today.
Could you guys will close that door?
Light up there.
I'll get it. Thank you.
Lutheran World Relief Go. Hello, I'm Catherine Wolford, and I'm at the Lutheran World Relief Warehouse in Maryland. Well, it's as if the outstretched arms of Christ reach from here around the world. When a Midwest television reporter set out to follow an LWR quilt, he found himself in Africa, in the nation of Angola. But that journey really began with people just like you.
As summer ends and fall begins, the harvest in the Red River Valley gets underway. And in churches everywhere, another harvest is about to begin. As the sun sets on the Great Plains, the heartland prepares to reach out to another world. Part of the world because every winter in church basements, many of you make hundreds of quilts which go around the world to people in need. Many of those quilts arrive here in Angola. Tonight we will bring you the stories of the people from Angola. There are are stories of despair, stories of hope. For the people here, it's a struggle to survive, but many of you have been helping them. And tonight, you will meet those people who are benefiting from your hours of caring. In a small rural church basement, there is the smell of coffee and the sound of quilters. Women of North Buffalo Lutheran Church near Cragness, Minnesota, have gathered as they have for decades. So the squares. These are threads of compassion. For hours they will work, honey, yeast, soap, their hands creating something that will mean so much to someone living a world away. The women often wonder where their quilts go, who gets them. Tonight, they will see this colorful quilt in the hands of a thankful friend in Angola, Africa. War, hunger, and uncertainty. Buena Angola, what once was a beautiful and rich Portuguese colonial village, has been reduced to near rubble. Because of a 20-year civil war that does not seem to end, this town of 20,000 has grown to over 150,000. War refugees fleeing their small villages have come here to survive. Some of the 2 million left home from what is called Africa's longest war. Angola's savanna has been stripped of its wild animals, slaughtered during the war. With huge supplies of oil and diamonds, Angola should be Africa's richest country. But war has left her in ruins and her people traumatized. Cannot return home. The rebel group, UNITA, controls much of their homeland, and mines have been buried everywhere. Roads into and out of this village have been impassable. People here are virtually trapped. An estimated 10 million mines are planted in Angola, many of them here and around Luena. The villagers must try to live with this every day. The risks are great. But every day, the women must gather wood and water to feed their families, so each day is a gamble. That is why a London-based humanitarian group called MAG has arrived in Angola. The Mines Advisory Group came to this village because so many people have been dying or maimed in mine explosions. In the area we visited, 23 active minefields threaten villagers every day.
No, it can be frustrating just because of the needless sort of waste of people's lives being ruined. But then what you're doing is trying to change that, so it's positive. You never feel like, well, we're not going to get anywhere, we're not going to do anything. Because every mine we lift is potentially one less amputee or one less child killed.
That is why MAG is training Angolans to find landmines in their villages and explode them. In this village, it is a risk to walk and gather food. The government left no maps of the mines it buried. They could be anywhere.
The scale of the problem is unbelievable.
A cruel reminder how senseless this war between the government and the rebels has become. While the gunfire has stopped for now, the mines have left the city under siege.
Basically, the city's ringed by mines put down by the government to keep your needs out. On the outside of those rings, you need to relay mines to keep the government in. It's a third world country. Apart from organizations like MAG and the other demining organizations, there's no one to help them.
Here, a Soviet-made landmine with a tripwire, waiting for its next innocent victim. Other live mines are buried next to grass huts, posing an everyday threat to human life.
There's at least 5 or 6 houses here since 1992. They've had 7 people who've been victims to mines. 4 were killed outright, 3 were amputees. The mines used to come up to here. This is where they stopped. The guy who lived in this house actually made a barbed wire fence about 2 meters out around his, around his house to try and keep his children in and out of the minefield.
This family lost their grandson, who left behind 5 children. Several of their neighbors have been killed or maimed. We are scared to even live here, she says. All we want to do is to be free to farm.
This is just terror, really.
At times, anti-tank mines are teamed with anti-personnel mines. The result is devastating, a huge hole, and a dead villager. 10 million mines have been buried in Angola. All MAG can do is search every inch of land, find the mines, and blow them up. Just one visit to the village hospital. Rooms are packed with those who have fallen victim to the mines, innocent civilians. The death traps do not discriminate. The very young, women, some who are not expected to even survive.
Landmines. Every 20 minutes, somebody, somewhere on the face of this earth steps on one. Follow a quilt and you might find yourself in one of the 60 countries around the world where mines lie buried in the ground. The worst affected countries are those where the Cold War flared into hot war. Countries like Cambodia, El Salvador, Angola. In Angola, where a shaky ceasefire is taking hold, landmines mock the hope for peace. If we are to help Angolans, who themselves have shown such courage and resilience in the face of adversity, then your gifts of love must go to where the weapons of war lie buried in the land. The cameraman for this program stepped off a path just to get a better picture of a woman chopping wood. Someone quickly pulled him back. Meanwhile, the woman kept on chopping her firewood. Like the people we see in Oyo's hospital, she has no choice. Our gifts of love must somehow strengthen her and give her a safer future.
In the village hospital, the conditions are pathetic. No electricity, water. The halls are as dark as the stories here. Families care for their own in rooms often without mattresses. Sometimes quilts from our area provide the only comfort to those injured or dying. In one room, 20-year-old Eduardo Guzala is recovering after he stepped on a mine while on his way to fish for food in the river. He's never been to school, and he tells us his life now will be one of misery because he stepped on the mine. 37-year-old Joao Luaca stepped on a mine searching for food to feed his 4 children. He hopes to get an artificial leg one day. Her head resting on a quilt, this woman's eyes tell the story of this civil war. A landmine took one leg, injured the other, and both her arms. We all wonder if she will make it. She is a symbol of everything that is wrong with this war. The quilts are everywhere throughout the hospital, sent here from churches. The quilts warm those who lie on the floor, suffering from malaria or malnutrition, the very young, the very sick. Back at the North Buffalo Lutheran Church in rural Cragness, Minnesota, the quilt is starting to take shape. Each year, women in hundreds of churches patiently piece together quilts that travel around the world. volunteers spend countless hours to make this human connection with another culture, another person in need. The art is passed on from generation to generation. So is the passion and the hope for those who get these gifts. Hands are tired, eyes strained, but the finishing touches are put on the quilt. It is then tied.
I used to watch my mother do this, but she'd sew these scraps and sew these scraps, but they say you become your mother, and I think I've done it.
And before it is packed and shipped with the others, a message for Africa.
This is my father's church. We made this quilt with love. God bless you. I wonder what they'll think with all those colors.
The quilt is complete. A quilt of colors on its way to Angola. It will make the long journey.
So what I want you to think about today is all of the ways a quilt might be used by the people that get the quilt.
Finally, the quilt is blessed at a North Buffalo church service before heading out to another part of the world. From here it traveled to Minneapolis, where thousands of quilts are bound together for shipment. From there, a long trip across the Atlantic, months later arriving in an Angolan port city. And because so many of the roads are still mined and under rebel control, humanitarian groups must fly in the quilts for now, along with life-saving food. In the eastern Angolan city of Luena, there are still vivid reminders of the Civil War. Soviet war vehicles have been left for rust. Angolan soldiers still guard against rebel forces. A two-man crude army post is found near the village. Since so much land is mined or under rebel UNITA control, thousands of refugees have found shelter in the old Portuguese colony of Luena. Once victims of the slave trade, the survival of the people now depends on the willingness of the rebels and the government to find peace. The train station is home to hundreds. It is here where Julia makes her home in the corner of a train car, barely room for her and her six children. She lost many family members during the recent war. I can't go home, she says. The war has not ended. The war has taken everything. My children are cold and hungry at night. I'm afraid my children will grow up in war. A state-of-the-art theater built by the Portuguese colonists now stages a real human drama. Hundreds of refugees crowding in here. Gunny sacks form walls for families who cannot go home because of war. Missile and bullet holes riddle the walls. But everywhere you look, there are children smiling. And in all these camps, signs of help and hope from the heartland. Quilts, hundreds of them, keeping people warm. Sometimes the only covering a family has at night. What is the future for the children of Angola? Will they know nothing but war? Children like 12-year-old Nevish. His father was killed in the war, and Nevish lost his leg after rebel soldiers burst into his family's hut, firing bullets into his young leg. With a somber face today, he tells us he wants to go to school one day, and he wants the war to stop. He stands near the place where he was shot, a casualty in what we call the Cold War. The Cold War is over now, but his country is left divided, his people deeply scarred. There are many areas of this village that create a sense of hopelessness. For over three decades, the people here have known nothing but war. First the War of Independence from Portugal, and then 20 years of civil war. Attempts at long-lasting peace have failed, and the people are afraid to go home. But there is hope. Lutheran World Federation, for example, has started this sewing center for villagers who have lost limbs in mine explosions. They are learning to make clothing, making something of their life. It is a sobering sight. Some here are missing both legs. This training may be the one hope for these people who have been maimed by the mines. 21-year-old Joao Luiz stepped on a mine while fleeing from the attacking Unita rebel soldiers. And then there's Isabel Dominguez. She is the mother of six. Her husband left her when she stepped on the landmine. Most of her family died in the minefields as they tried to escape the war. She lost her leg and the baby she was carrying. I thought I was dead, she tells us. Because I lost a leg and I'm a woman, I am nothing. Every day she walks to the sewing center. It is the one hope for her future. She says she can't be angry with God because he saved her life when the mine exploded. She now prays every day that help will come for her and her children. Lutheran World Federation and Lutheran World Relief are also helping war orphans get an education. Schools made of wood and brass are a start. And at this orphanage in the village, 60 boys, victims of war, wait for gifts from you. Homemade school bags with paper, pencils, and crayons. For them, it's like gold. Inside, their beds are covered with quilts given by many of you. Tattered and torn from years of use, it's all the children have. And as humanitarian groups clear landmines, refugees are able to settle back in their villages. They are looking ahead. New grass huts are being built on former battlegrounds. Schools and clinics are going up, everyone hoping peace will last. And to help these people help themselves, seed is distributed to villagers so they can begin to grow crops again on land now cleared of mines. They are desperate for food. And tempers flare at these distribution sites as villagers clamor for seed. But the effort is paying off. Back on land cleared of mines, villagers fend for themselves. They show others that dependency on the UN and aid groups is not a forever.
If you just keep giving them material aid all the time, you build this kind of a dependency syndrome which will not go away. And you have to take advantage of the sense of pride people have. Everybody has that, and they want to work. And you can, if you can tap into that, a resource of working hard, which you will do, then you can go a long way.
Because peace is so fragile, the UN has a strong presence here, a 7,500 member peacekeeping force. They, along with the humanitarian groups, see to it that guns are silent and people are fed. Tons of food are flown in every week. Hungry children cheer when corn and grain arrive at the refugee center. There is also anticipation today because word has spread the quilts are arriving. For some in this forgotten corner of Angola, and for the quilters far away, this is the day. the UN plains. Come garden rakes for the villagers, then the quilts. It is time to distribute the quilts. Nevish, the little boy you met, is there. So is Julia from the train car. The young amputee from the sewing center. And Isabel, all waiting patient, hoping their family will go home with a gift from women in the Red River Valley. Slowly!
Isabel Dominguez!
And remember the quilt we saw made in the country church basement? It went to Julia. We remember the prayer from one mother to another.
We made this quilt with love. God bless you.
Everywhere we traveled in nearby villages, we saw quilts used as bedding in grass huts, as sleeping mats in Lutheran World Federation schools, comfort babies just hours old in a post-war clinic. And what a sight to see, hundreds of quilts spread out near a river, washed and left to dry in the sun. Where refugees live crowded together and whole families may share one cover at night, quilts can be life-saving.
The quilts have been extremely important, especially during the cold season. It gets cold and damp here. And we have no other source of blankets or those type of materials. And they've been very handy, and I'm sure the quilts have saved a lot of lives of these kids, stopped them from getting TB, or if they have malaria, stopped them from getting worse.
Perhaps the most moving visit for us came when quilts from area churches found their way to the hospital. Landmine survivors accepted this small comfort. Anonymous gifts from far away brought gracious smiles to the war-weary faces of Angola. People just wanting to live in peace and be free.
Thanks to Lutherans like the women of North Buffalo, in just 1 year, LWR was able to send to Angola 67,000 quilts, as well as school, health, and sewing kits, and 150 tons of clothing, too. With your support, we're also able to help people regain their self-reliance. As you have seen, the woman who receives a quilt may also be learning a trade at an LWF sewing workshop, or having her baby safely at a health clinic. The child with the school kit is also attending a community kindergarten. And the man with the t-shirt is also helping to rebuild his village or plant a garden on land that has finally been cleared of landmines. Jesus says, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted." What thousands of Lutheran parishes are doing is living that beatitude. You gather up comfort to be shared in far-off places, and thus God's promise comes alive for those who mourn the loss of loved ones, their homes, their land, and even the wholeness of their own bodies.
These are some of the 100 million quilts that LWR ships overseas each year. There's a new way that you can help extend this ministry of love. On average, it costs LWR about $2 to send a quilt to a place like Angola. Comfort those who mourn. Join LWR's Project Comfort and help speed quilts and other parish projects on their way. Where do quilts go? To a woman named Isabel, to a town called Buena. To ask that question is to ask where Christ's love would take us. For Christ has filled our arms with gifts of love, and when we go and seek the answer, Christ fills our hearts as well.
Outside Julia's train car, the African sky is stormy. Smoky fires fill the rail yard. And on this evening, Julia tucks her children under a quilt we saw made with threads of love thousands of miles from here. It still smells new, and from now on, it will keep her family warm.
Put things into perspective as to how lucky we really are. We're rich. when a person has so much to think that, you would, that a blanket would be something you would need that badly. I don't think it's something I can imagine.
We have so much, and we need to be very grateful for that. And we need to be thankful that we can do this work and send these things to other people who need them.
And as we say goodbye to Angola, we are reminded of what we learned, witnessing the hope these people have in all their despair, the hope for an end to war, for a chance to walk their land in safety, for a future their children can look forward to. It is evening in Africa, and the people are singing. It is a song of hope that we can hear around the world.
The lights on.
It was great.
These people visited Angola, so they're biased. Well, some comments, some reactions. We could talk a lot about landmines. And I hope that those of you who wonder where an LWR quilt goes can take with you this idea that this wonderful but simple form of comfort can take you far away and open up a whole new world of both suffering but also of great joy.
I often wonder how come the countries are in a neutral position right now, why they can't, the leaders, go in there and clean those mines. I've read quite a bit about them and what they mean and the injured people, not only Angola, other parts
yeah.
of the country. And it seems to me the ones that put it in there know where the mines are, and they should be able to get them out.
I'm afraid, at least in Angola, and I think it's pretty true in a lot of places, war doesn't provide a lot of time for people to keep track of what they do. And you can sow landmines from the air, actually. But you can only pick them up the way you saw there, with a helmet and a flak jacket and a probe. And it takes one man, in those circumstances, an hour to do 2 square yards. Angola is a quarter the size of the USA. And nobody knows where the mines are. They say there are 10 million mines. But there may be 1 million, there may be 20 million. It doesn't matter. If one has gone off in that field there, you're not gonna go to that field unless somebody checks it.
No, right.
And it's gonna take an hour for 2 square yards to check that field. And as I said, and they said in the film, there are 2 rings around Luena. There are 27 minefields around Luena. And the MAG guy that you saw there said he watched them, when the fighting was going on, he watched the government soldiers run out to fight UNITA, the rebels, and then realize that they were in an area that they themselves had mined, and suddenly lose all their desire to fight, and drop back and not fight. I mean, it has the same effect on soldiers that it has on civilians.
I'm sure it does. Especially when you've got your life at stake.
Yeah, it's an incredible weapon.
Let's get out of here.
Isn't the average something like $60 per mine?
No. If you can make one for $3 to $10. To clear it is $300 to $1,000.
$300,
okay. So $650 is an average to clear one mine. But you can put one in the ground for $3. Mm-hmm. And they're reckoned to be 110 million out there. 23 million are in Egypt, probably in the Sinai, because of the Egypt-Israeli war. But countries like Angola, Cambodia, Afghanistan are... In Cambodia, something like a third of the farmland is mined in Cambodia. Yeah.
I wanted to clarify that in the film focused on Luena, but there are landmines just all over Angola.
Exactly.
And when we were in Luanda, the sight of amputees was everywhere, you know, children and women. And one Sunday morning, we were going to an English service downtown, and we were driving down the street, and there were five young men in combat fatigues going down the street in single file, and they were all on crutches, and mm-hmm. they all had lost a leg. Mm-hmm. It was very common.
Yeah. The figure I have is there are 70,000 Angolans without a limb because of landmines, and the number is climbing. In Luena, there are 3,000.
And some of them don't even have crutches.
Right. The only place you get a prosthesis right now, I think, is in Luanda, and it's hard to get.
Yeah.
Isabel, who you saw here, wants to go to Luanda to get another one because hers is wearing out, but her chances of getting on the plane are pretty slight. Yeah.
Jonathan, I recall there was an international ban on landmines being proposed. Was it by the UN? I can't have the U.S. happy.
This is really an important point. Canada is leading a movement which it now has about 85 countries behind it to ban landmines. And just in November this year, they're going to meet in Ottawa and they're going to ban them. They're going to say these things are banned. And they're going to wait for people to join up on the right side of the question by using that type of strategy.
But the U.S. has been dragging its
feet. The U.S. is dragging its feet. Clinton says he wants to rid, if you read our petition, it starts out with one of his quotes. Well, that's a word that he's given us, but he hasn't acted on that word. The U.S. is pursuing a disarmament conference strategy in Geneva, where they proceed by consensus, not by leadership or by vision. And so everybody can kill the discussion in Geneva. It's lowest common denominator type negotiation. And every little complaint can drag the thing out for years. This issue can't wait for years. It's got to happen now, and I think Canada is really showing the way. And that's what our petition is aimed at, and that's why it's really important for you to sign, but also for you to write to your congresspeople, senators, congressmen, and say, this is an issue we can be on the right side of. Go to Ottawa. Join the Ottawa process, is what it's called, and boost that number above 85, because if the U.S. does it, there's about 20 fence-sitting countries out there who are waiting to see what the U.S. will do. We want to use landmines in the Gulf to protect our national drug, oil.
In Korea.
And in Korea because we think it's so touchy there. Instead of making peace, we want to have to keep the option of landmines there. We also want to, we don't want to use dumb landmines, we want to keep smart ones, the ones that self-destruct after a given amount of time. We think we should be able to keep smart mines. Well, got to say a word about that. First of all, smart minds are not smart enough to tell the difference between a child and a soldier. And secondly, 30% of them fail to detonate when they're supposed to after 3 months or 6 months or 1 year, however long you think your war is going to take you. And most importantly, if we insist on keeping smart minds, and we have 10 million in stock in this country, 10 million smart minds on the shelf waiting to be used or sold. If we insist on keeping smart minds, the countries who sell and make dumb minds won't sign any deal because it means we're going to steal the market from them. Pakistan and China especially are manufacturers of dumb mines, so-called, and they won't sign any ban. And we've got to really focus on the big producers. I have some documentation on who produces it. There are 47 companies in America who produce landmines or have produced landmines. They don't produce them now. Nobody's producing them in this country right now. But those 47 companies have been listed by Human Rights Watch, a good organization, and it gave every one of the 47 time to get off the list before they published it. They said, we're going to publish this list. Do you want to be on it or not? And I can read you the companies. And 17 said, no, we don't want to be on that. We will not make landmines anymore. And Motorola was one who dipped out.
Does that mean they're just not making them within our boundaries?
No, it means there's no Pentagon contracts right now. We have 10 million on the shelf. I guess that's enough.
Would they be making them with their plants overseas and selling them to other countries?
Could be. But they're made in, I think, 30 different countries. There's 300 varieties. It's got to be a worldwide ban. It really has to be a weapon that that enough people rise up and say, we don't need this. We've done that more or less, haven't we, with chemical weapons, biological weapons, they're unconscionable. These things are $3 items, you know, many different kinds. Some jump up and blow up, some have a tripwire, some lie there. They're not, in and of themselves, they're not so frightening, but what they end up doing is frightening. And a key statistic is that the landmines, as a weapon system, kill 9 civilians for every soldier that they kill. So you use them in war, but the casualties you get out of the war are 10% of the casualties that those landmines will ultimately do. And who dies? People who walk in the course of their daily life. People who gather firewood. In that hospital, I asked each one of the people you saw, what were you doing when you stepped on it? Getting firewood, getting water, getting herbs, medicinal herbs in one case. The boy, the 20-year-old boy that they went tight on, the first guy you saw, he was fishing. He went to arrange a line that was snagged, and he stepped on a line when he moved off where he was standing. It's interesting, too, that the people who die from them are people of color, because we chose to fight the Cold War in other people's backyard. And in Angola, we put our money into one side, the Soviets put their money into the other, the South Africans fought for us, the Cubans fought for them, the Russians. And the country is littered when we're all done. Afghanistan is we don't even know how bad Afghanistan is. Cambodia, there's a good sense of how bad it is. Yes, sir.
The ban essentially say we won't think of anymore. Is that what
the ban?
The countries that sign up for the ban.
Yeah, the ban is going to ban, you know, production, sale, transfer, export, import. It's going to ban. It's lawyer language to ban every single thing to do with them. But there are 100 million in stock, as well as 110 million in the ground. So it's not going to be easy. But there's only one way to go on this question. You know, and it's just a question of how can we make it step by step. Yeah.
Well, I'm a little confused because the petitions you have out, are they the same as petitions that have been around for probably 4 or 5 months?
In our churches?
Well, no, just out in general, because I know I've signed a ban.
Okay.
A ban petition, and it wasn't put out by the Lutheran Church, but it was a petition to do just that very thing. And so how many different initiatives are there, and is there coordination? So there's one
trust,
and that's, I guess, what I'm...
That's a good question. The LWR petition has been around for a year, and we've gotten to 80,000 roughly. We're trying to get 110 now. The original goal was 67,000, because Catherine Wolford, the woman we saw at the last year's Women of the ELCA convention in Minneapolis, almost on the podium had the idea, hey, we sent 67,000 quilts to Angola, let's send President Clinton 67,000 signatures asking him to ban, to do what he said he would do. And that's where the 67 came from. We passed that about a month ago, and now we're up to 75-80. It's quite coordinated. It's the U.S. campaign to ban landmines, run by the Vietnam Veterans of America. And within it are about, in America, about 400 groups like LWR who are doing things about it. And there's room for all kinds of things. If you want to go and picket Alliant Tech in Hopkins, Minnesota, who won't renounce making of landmines, you can do that with a local group. Lutherans have collected more signatures than any other church group or any other group in America right now. Worldwide, the campaign is much more advanced, I think, than it is here. There's something like 5 million signatures out there that have been presented at the UN. But we need this kind of popular opinion and groundswell of support to make the leaders and the military leaders understand that these weapons are something we can do without. It's an anti-people weapon, and the people have to put it in its place, I think. Yeah, sorry, Bob.
It was mentioned in the film that Angola could have been the richest country in Africa. What were the resources this country had?
Gulf oil is there in a big way, and it has diamonds. And interestingly enough, The people have not profited from the wealth. The diamonds have kept UNICA going, as well as support for people like the U.S. And the oil has kept the government going. And if you want to get fascinated, this civil war went on and on, and we were backing Jonas Savimbi and the UNITA rebels to knock down a so-called Marxist regime in the capital city, which is still in power. They're no longer very Marxist. I don't think they ever really were, but they had to find support to fight back against the people we were backing. So they went to Russia and they got help, and Cuba gave them help. All through that war, however, Gulf Oil stayed operating in the Cabinda enclave. And Gulf Oil, where is it, in Dallas? It's a tower of capitalism, wherever it is. Gulf Oil was protected by Marxist troops against the rebels we were paying to knock down the Marxist government. Now, if that isn't a crock of something, you know. And the tragedy is, it made these people won their independence in 1975. They fought Portugal, who had enslaved them. The blacks in Brazil are essentially Angolans. The slave trade from Africa to Brazil, you know, about half of Brazil, I think, is Afro-Brazilian. They're essentially Angolans. For 300 years, the Portuguese, on behalf of us white people, I guess, were raiding Angola and taking them off to Brazil.
16 million.
16 million?
16 million shipped out of Luanda.
Well, there's only 12 million in the country today.
That was over a century.
Yeah, over 300 years. And then for 100 years it was a Portuguese slavery was banned fairly late in Brazil, I think 1885 or something it went in Brazil. And then they had 100 years of colonialism. And they built nice cities like Luena and
Luanda.
Except
that the nationals weren't allowed to live in the cities. Yeah. They only came into the cities to work. And then when the Portuguese left, they left in a matter of days.
Right.
And none of the nationals had been allowed to be educated. And it was illegal
to educate your servant. National Angolan servants are evil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so when the Portuguese left, nobody had had any education, and nobody had been in any position of government.
Right.
And so, you know, consequently, chaos.
Right. And our decision to get involved in 75 followed very closely on our defeat in Vietnam. The CIA was looking around the world for a place to beat the Russians, because we just got beat in Vietnam. And they picked Angola. And they took Jonas Savimbi, a tin pot megalomaniac who is still on the loose, who's still refusing to come to the capital and assume the vice presidency of the country, which they gave him on a platter. He lost a fair election in 92. The woman I talked about last night, Janita, who fled and then went back to get food in her garden, that was the siege that took place after Jonas Savimbi refused to accept his defeat at the ballot box. Instead went back to war, and we didn't stop him.
Well, and killed more than had been in the 10 to 15 years.
In the previous 15 years of civil war.
In that next 9 months.
Yeah.
All supported by the United States.
This is an enormous amount of spilled milk, you know? But the way out of it is to help pick up those mines, to help sending the comfort that we are able to do, to support the programs that provide schooling. There are places in eastern Angola where the only paper in the town, and the government even uses the paper, has been ripped out of Lutheran World Relief school kits. The government officials are using Lutheran World Relief notebooks because that's the only paper. There's no economy. Is that a good use of our aid? I think so. You know, but they want to get back on their feet. They want to go out and put their country back together.
One more footnote. One of the other major sources of support for Savimbi was Mobutu.
Yeah.
And so with him out of Zaire,
right,
there is real hope for resolution,
right,
much more than there was.
And our CIA aide went through Mobutu to them. He took his cut.
It's not that.
He took his cut and then it went in. Yeah.
but you're getting to the other real great resource they have is the people. Because, you know, despite lack of education and not being able to get into their fields to farm, when we were there, we found so much creativity and this exuberance. I don't know how they get up every morning, but they do, and they sing, and just so much ingeniousness, so many smiles. And just finding ways to make a buck, to buy some bread. I mean, kids will come up to your car, you know, at the market or the store, and offer to guard your car, you know, because they're making money for the family. And they'll guard your car because somebody else might come along and take parts off of it in order to sell it to make a buck. Because they have, it's so desperate. They'll do whatever they can think of, because they have to find some way to feed their families, because they can't
get on
the land.
Well, is the Lutheran Church through Lutheran World Relief or through any other way, is the church involved in any political activity as they are in, say, Namibia or other countries where the church actually becomes a political force? Which may or may not be good.
Not Lutherans in Angola. There are some Lutherans because of the proximity to Namibia. Namibia is the next country to the south. And some of those Ovambo-speaking people are on the Angolan side of the border. There's a little Lutheran church in the south, and some of them are in Luanda, the capital. The important churches are Catholic, and I think Methodist is pretty strong. No Lutheran. I mean, as I said last night, you saw the pictures of the museum and the burlap bags. That's where everybody held up a quilt from each cubicle. They don't know what a Lutheran is, except that Lutheran World Relief has kept their town, Lutheran World Federation has kept their town alive for 10 years. And actually had one plane shot down by UNITA. We had to fly in like this. So you don't approach over the rebel territory. It's a ceasefire, it's a peace process, but nobody's giving up or anything very fast. UNITA holds the countryside, the government has the people, and they're not trading yet, even though they've signed a deal. Other comments? Questions? Well, let me just say that if you feel that you would like to contribute to this landmine question, sign that petition. But remember, a letter or a fax to Washington is worth quite a bit more to a senator than your signature. So that's an important thing to think about. Find out where, you can call the Lutheran Office on Governmental Affairs in Washington, find out where your congressperson is standing, persons are standing on this bill. Senator Leahy of Vermont is the champion of the landmine ban in the Senate. And there's a guy named, I can't think who he is, in the House who's trying to get up some steam there as well. But it's something that we can do something about. You can get a copy from me of some of the companies that are involved in this, and if they're in your community, it might be worth talking to them and say, do you really need to make these weapons? It's going to take action on a lot of fronts for a lot of years before this really goes someplace. But the ban is the most important thing. Picking up the landmines is actually secondary to the ban. It's very hard to do. And people, they learn to live with it. You know, they don't go in that. If you can mark a field, they won't use it. They'll go another way. And they're willing to be resourceful. They have no choice but to be resourceful, to live with the mines until they can be gotten out. But I said the other day at a session, I met a Cambodian man who lost both legs. He was a soldier who wasn't allowed into a refugee camp because he'd been, no, sorry, he wasn't allowed into a refugee camp on the border of Cambodia in 1985 because he was a young male. And so he became a soldier. And as a soldier, he stepped on a landmine. And he blew off both of his legs. And the nearest health post was 30 kilometers away. And he actually had to cut off the remains of one of his legs so his buddy could carry him to get to the health post. Here he is 12 years later, And he's the most gentlest, smilingest, kindest, wonderfulest person you could meet. And he comes to New York and talks to us. And he went to Washington and helped hand over these signatures to Senator Leahy. And he said something that I had never imagined someone would say. He said, "A ban is worth 110 million martyrs like me." He called himself a martyr. He said, 110 million of us could step on those ones that are out there and blow them all up that way, as long as you guys who make them will ban them. Because what this man, his name is Chenoweth, what Mr. Chenoweth has seen, he's been working 6 years as a wheelchair designer. And in 6 years, his center has trained 475 people to get back on their wheels and get on with their lives in Cambodia. But 200 or 300 people step on a landmine every month in Cambodia. And more have been planted than have been picked up in the 3 or 4 years, 5 years that he's been paying attention to the course of the issue in his country. So he comes to New York in his gentleness and kindness, without his legs, and he says, "A ban is worth 110 million martyrs."